The History of Personal Computing. History of Personal Computing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of the History of Personal Computing eBay Edition podcast. Jeff and I are back on this 4th of July holiday weekend, and we've got a great series of historic personal computers to look at. We're recording today on Sunday afternoon, July 3rd. And Jeff, what's new with you?
I am going to Disneyland.
Really?
Well, that's how the saying goes, but really I'm going to the Apple II version of Disneyland, which is Kansas Fest.
Oh, yeah. And that's only, what, 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, that's like, what, the third week in July, if I recall.
Oh, yeah, because in putting our notes together, we'll be recording one just begin before you go, I think, as long as you don't have an issue with that.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem. Some people are already saying, hey, it's going to be a mega podcast there, so... I assume something will, I may have to represent this podcast there.
Oh yeah, they always try to do, I think, a big group podcast. I was just looking at this, when is it? It's like the, isn't that the funny thing? It's not right
on the 18th to the 24th.
Okay, yeah. And then we'll be recording that Thursday ahead of it, and then Friday. So great, congratulations. Did you want to talk any more about how or why that's come about, or...
Well, you know, and I feel bad for not remembering the person's name. I was actually trying to look that up. I should really know my benefactor.
I'll try to look it up. You talk. Go ahead.
Anyway, I subscribe to the Apple II enthusiast group on
and me too
Facebook. I'm actually trying to look up the list. There's so many different Apple II ones. I forget the exact name of the one that I subscribe to.
I'll find out.
But.
I'm Apple II enthusiasts on Facebook.
That's it. Okay, so I was right. There it is. I'll click on that. Anyway, one morning, was it last Thursday, I saw somebody had posted that they're looking for people who have not been to Kansas Fest before and who can get themselves there and, you know, basically unable to afford to go there. So I kind of fit the qualifications, but I didn't do anything that morning. I just kind of waited it out. That I'm trying to find the actual thread. And some people were saying that they
Mark
like
Pilgrim.
That's it. And I'm still looking for it, the thread. But some people said they would like to go, but they can't make it, this, that, and the other. And then close to the end of the day, I saw a lot of people weren't able to take him up on his offer. So I read a little more what was going on, and all I had to do was register for the event. So I registered myself, and my son was registered, and we were told to pay by check because, you know, it's going to be paid otherwise. And he said he's going to pay for five people to attend. And I got my registration in, I guess, later that evening, and my son and I were picked. So it, you know, that was wonderful. I'd like to thank Mark for that. It's going to be a great trip.
He's a hero.
He is. And
it's a really nice thing to do.
It's very nice. Absolutely. I don't know who the other three people are. The thread got really busy real quick. And I was just weeding through myself. I think it was Thursday that this happened, because I think Friday was the day that I learned more about it, you know, being accepted and stuff, and finding out that, hey, this might actually go through.
That's really exciting.
It's like 97% done right now. The only thing is, Mark, I guess, is submitting payment, and it has to be coordinated with the people who run it so they can, you know, put it in the appropriate people's registration. So I didn't receive my official welcome registration yet, you know, saying that it's all paid up and ready to go.
Right.
I assume I will get one. So I'm just crossing my fingers that, you know, this goes completely through, because it's going to be a long drive for me. And my son, he's old enough to drive now. So,
well, it's going to be really exciting. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. It's one of those bucket list things. It wasn't at the top of the list. And oh, there it is. There's the post. It was on June 29th. Okay. Yeah, and it was great. And this is like the second trip my son and I were taking because somebody gave us tickets. Now, these are worth an awful lot more. But many years ago, my son and I went to Maker Faire in Detroit because somebody DigiKey was giving out tickets. But yeah, I've always wanted to go to Kansas Fest, and who knows, I might meet Woz this time, you know, or for once in my life.
And did you say it's like a 10-hour drive?
It's about a 10-hour drive, but that's easy. I'm splitting it.
It's not bad.
2 days out, 2 days back.
Well, so I swear Mark Pilgrim, the name does sound kind of familiar, though I don't know. I'm not connected with him. But
he's published, and I know he went to previous events.
Yeah, I see him, you know, of course, on his Facebook profile. It says he's from North Carolina, or he's in North Carolina. He works at Google since 2007. So anyway, Mark Pilgrim, you're a good guy. Thanks for doing that.
Yes, right? Thank you.
So I actually had a benefactor as well as Earl Evans, and it was our co-host on the Retro Computing Roundtable, Carrington Vanston. So that was really nice. And I know his family's company sponsored us to go. So that was
wonderful.
2012.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had a really good time, and I certainly like the Apple II. Like, I like a lot of old computers, because I don't have a history with the Apple II particularly. But I still really enjoyed it. You know, obviously, it's very Apple II focused. And of course,
that's not a problem for me. I can appreciate the Apple II.
Yeah.
I might even bring mine just to see.
Well, you're going to enjoy it more because you're going to be able to get into more of the hacking aspect of it.
That would be nice.
The programming and messing around and the good hacking, in other words. And that was something I don't really have the skills.
It's like a summer camp, isn't it? I mean, you get room and board for the whole period. And of course, there's a few times that they go out, you know, as a group.
It really is like an adult summer camp. So, and it's just a lot of good guys and women, and just a really fun time.
I am looking forward to it. And I'm glad I don't have to wait like 5 months for it.
So, all right, moving along. So I have a little bit of news. I was contacted a couple of weeks ago by a former coworker, and he said that at his parents' house where he was going then for like a week or something, and I'm not sure if I think these were mostly his father's, but he basically brought back and gave me a SUV load of old computers.
Wow.
So that's like, man, really, really fun and nice, right? And I'll see if I can mention off a few. Well, sitting right here with me, and I was just messing with him, is a
Tandy, our new co-host. No.
Tandy 100.
Okay.
How about that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I just put batteries in it, and it wouldn't come on. And so I don't know what the deal is.
You got them in the right way? Is the contrast knob down?
Yeah, I tried it all. And then also the NEC PC8201A, which is the NEC equivalent of it. And the same deal, put brand new fresh batteries in it, and it doesn't come on. So I don't, you know, for both of them, just not to work.
Maybe yours aren't brand new fresh batteries.
Well, they're brand new in the package, but we'll try that out. Also, I got here, let's see, on the desk, this is a little HP, this is a Tandy pocket computer, PC8.
Oh, really, the 8?
Yeah, this is like
that's a late bloomer.
Yeah, and it's the smallest one out of all of them. It's not as long as some of the other ones. Also, an Epson HX8. Computer here, which is, I'm trying to slide it over with my feet because I have headphones. Okay, here it is. So, is this a Epson PX8? And it's kind of interesting because it has like a little printer built into it, and it's got I'm confusing it. That's a different one. Here we go. Oh, you know what it is? It's the Geneva, and it's got a cassette deck in it. And what's the other one that's like the handheld, sort of like the 100 and 102 Epson one?
Isn't that the PX8?
No, slightly different. But this is called Geneva, and the screen actually folds down over the top.
Okay, I'm now looking at a picture of it's a CPM system, portable CPM system.
I think so. So anyway, that's pretty cool.
Let me guess, you put batteries in it, it doesn't work.
Did I try this one yet? I don't think I've powered it on yet.
Okay.
I've tried it. Also, I have here a...
What's neat that it's got the micro drive in it, too.
Yeah. I also have a Hewlett-Packard 71B programmable calculator, and that's pretty neat. Or I think / computer. I think it's actually called like a handheld computer, and it still has its government tag on it, property of U.S. government, DOE-RL. So I think his father acquired a lot of this from government surplus. But okay, but you ready? I also got...
I've never seen the 71B before. It looks neat.
Yeah, I also got a Macintosh Portable that looks brand spanking new in the case, but it doesn't work.
Battery.
Yep, that's exactly for the reasons we talked about just last show. It looks brand new. I'm not kidding.
And the rollerball doesn't stick or anything like that.
I don't think this thing was ever used, so it looks really brand new.
Is it the backlit version?
That I don't know. I guess I could look up the model number.
Or you look at the display. If the display is unusually dark, it's
backlit. Oh, yeah. I don't have it right here next to me.
Okay.
But I've been looking up how to fix the battery or what to replace it with, so I can report on that. But then I also got a Compact Portable 2, which for the most part resembles the original Compact Portable, but it's slightly different when you open it up, the keyboard and stuff. A bunch of them. A Toshiba T1200.
We were talking about those. Boy, you're just your whole past of this.
It's funny.
Series is coming back to you.
Also, a
materializing.
I can't remember the brand, but sort of a generic late 80s DOS like laptop, but a nice one that works. And and then a couple of interesting Sharp laptops and portables, which. Odd. One of them looks sort of like the Gen 3 sort of compact portable with the plasma display. It's not plasma, though. This one, but you know how the display sort of like a lunchbox style?
Yeah.
So this is, it's got a LCD display.
Instead of the red plasma.
Yeah, very interesting. And I'm missing a couple here, but, and then a whole box full of software and just tons of stuff to look at and go through. So, you know, awesome. I'm a big time collector again. Instant collection.
Yeah, almost sounds like, well, I mean, you get a big haul like that, that's kind of a once in a lifetime thing for some people. My big haul was all Commodore. Your big haul is some of these interesting
all
niche
portables.
PCs. Yeah, all portables, that's right.
So I'm going to mess with them, and I'll keep some of them. I'll probably pass it along, give away some of them to some guys in the club here locally. But
sounds
fun.
Really
fun.
Good, yeah.
So I've been spending time over the holiday weekend, extended weekend. I'm cleaning the garage finally and making room and organizing and stuff. So, all right. Well, I guess we'll move along.
Yes.
So this, again, is the podcast where we take an informal look at personal computing history through the lens of eBay auctions. And it's sort of like Antiques Roadshow, but all about antique personal computers. On today's show, we continue our coverage of the second phase of portables, the laptop. Today, we're exclusively covering the Apple PowerBook, since there's just so much to cover. Many may not know that the PowerBook line of laptops was very influential to design of all laptops, both in the early 90s and in the early 2000s. And I know, Jeff, I think you had mentioned this is an actual sort of a line you don't know a whole lot about.
That's true. I haven't really played with them too much.
So
I'm still boring beige box myself at this time.
So I'll tell you about a few interesting things about how the how it really influenced like all laptops there for on a number of times. But over it's about its first 10-year run. So this is from Wikipedia. The PowerBook, known as Macintosh PowerBook before 1997, is a line of Macintosh laptop computers that was designed, manufactured, and sold by Apple Computer Incorporated from 1991 to 2006. And just interestingly, the reason it stopped in 2006 is that's when then Apple adopted the Intel processors. And so then they became known as MacBook Pros after that. MacBooks and MacBook Pros. During its lifetime, the PowerBook went through several major revisions and redesigns, often being the first to incorporate features that would later become standard in competing laptops. The PowerBook line was targeted at the professional market and received numerous awards, especially in the second half of its life, such as the 2001 Industrial Design Excellent Awards Gold status and Engadget's 2005 Laptop of the Year. Now, here's something not in the Wikipedia, I'm saying this, that it's kind of interesting, is at the time the PowerBook came out, Macs used and Apple used the Motorola processors. So they used the 68000 series, 68030 and 040 and so on. But then ultimately they ended up using PowerPC processors, which sort of seems like you would think that's why they called them PowerBooks.
Yeah, it was just a naming convention.
Yeah, it was kind of just, it ended up being a coincidence. But then I guess when they went to Intel, then they just decided to rename it altogether so it wouldn't have that word power in it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I have a couple PowerBooks just because I've acquired them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you much about them, but I know I do have them. I think they're both color screen.
Yeah.
And they... They're probably the later in the 2000s. They're not the earlier ones with like the mechanical trackball.
Do you do much with them?
I've booted them up just to make sure they work, to see which version of, I think it's OS 7 on the ones I have. And then I kind of put them away.
Okay. And System 7.
I'm sorry. that's how much I know about them.
And then starting with 8, it became Mac OS 8.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? That might have started with 7.6, I think. So my memory is fading on that. I have to look it up. But anywho, you take it away with the first auction. And actually, the one that you picked here, this was actually a pretty interesting... It didn't last, this particular innovation, but it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I just kind of went down the list. Now, this first one here is, well, it's... From what I understand, it has the Apple Macintosh PowerBook Duo M7777. But if I recall, this is the 120 or something like that.
It's a Duo 230.
I thought I picked something a little older. Anyway,
I think that's the first one.
Because it was a black and white screen.
Yeah, I think that's the very first Duo.
And it's a pretty nice looking screen, too, considering the era.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a nice, good medium contrast display to it. And it has a nice little round trackball in the center and then two buttons. I don't know if they worked both the same or if that's when they started using two buttons in the Mac OS. I don't know when they started doing it. I remember Mac always being a one-button mouse.
Well, now you say two-button. I think it is just one button. It's just one big button above the trackball.
And what's the one below it then?
Is that a latch? Yeah, I think that's just the circle, the ring holding the ball.
Well, no, down towards around the front of the keyboard area, it looks like it might be a button.
Okay, I'm trying to get
some
there.
Other pictures here.
Oh, by the way, you might hear noises here at the home because go ahead, close it.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's 4th of July weekend. We got family over, so what the heck, right?
He's in and out.
So you hear people coming and going a little bit. I just told them to keep it down. Oh yeah, I see what you mean. Exactly. So yeah, I think they're the same, but I'm not sure. I don't think you had right click and all that back then.
Finger and thumb, using.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Just gave you the option.
But it's nothing fancy about it. It just says used in overall good condition. Somewhere seen at the closure. Contains the power cord, and I think they said that it's not the original one, but it still powers up.
Huh.
And I see a big box power supply that says Apple on it, but it might be the cord that goes into that.
Right, right. Because
they don't
that's
show
a standard
it.
Cord.
It doesn't create magic power, even if it is Apple. So yeah, probably the AC.
Oh, I see. There's a picture, and it shows like a weird white cord, iMac cord or something going into it. But it works because it's just that three prong, I believe, sort of connection.
Yeah, it puts the 120 volts into the power supply.
There's nothing unique about it other than its shape.
And the price. Not a bad price.
No.
If somebody wanted to spend $55 on one, and that's 23 bids. It actually won at $55 and free shipping.
Hmm.
So I don't know. These things, would they be comparable to, say, the desktop Macintosh in its power and features, just a portable version?
Well, so this is all at the top of my head, unless I go look it up or whatever. But so here I go with it, okay? I'm fairly knowledgeable about these things. But if I'm not mistaken, this particular PowerBook Duo 230, I believe, is the first generation of the Duo. And, of course, they were called Duo because they were part of what was called the Duo dock system. And so you had this desktop docking station you could buy. And then what you would do is you had your nice slim laptop that you take with you, then you could come home and you'd close it and slide it into the dock, and it would actually grab it, sort of like a disk drive, and then pull it in about like a half an inch or something, an inch, and then now you had all the benefits of a desktop system. I think they were fairly well powered. They still didn't compete with standard desktops, but they were close. You're getting this is like mid 90s, I think. You're getting to be close to what. laptops coming up to speed with like desktops, but not quite.
Yeah, but you had the portability and you can run the
same software. It was really unique. And then when you wanted to take it with you, you'd push a button and it would eject it like an inch or so, and then you pulled the laptop out. And actually, this is the closest thing to like a sort of a maybe what you call a netbook. You know, the early netbook where it was slim and light, more lightweight than you know, regular laptops at the time. And also, if I'm not mistaken, this is a grayscale one, but it is Active Matrix, which was a high-end, you know, high-quality display. It
makes the screen clearer. You don't see a lot of ghosting as you would in some other screens.
Yeah, but really cool. And this is one of the systems, if you're a fan of Seinfeld, you know, he goes through different Macs on his desk in the background in his apartment over the 7 years or whatever. And at one point, he has a DuoDock system.
Okay.
It may or may not be this particular DuoDock because it's docked. You don't see it. But yeah, it's really cool if you've never seen it work with actually dock. But if I'm not mistaken, this is probably like an 040 processor or something, 68,040.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems to be a good deal. $55 shipped. I would.
And I've noticed most of them like that aren't very expensive on eBay. You know, if you wanted one to just complement your collection, just to say that you have a PowerBook.
Well, I think this person got a good deal. What, this just ended yesterday, and it looks to be real clean. It works, and for that kind of money, when I was looking for my auctions to include this show, I was finding a lot of PowerBooks weren't working, or missing batteries or power supplies or whatever, and then still way more money than this. So
broken tabs or something like that.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'll point out is, so if you look at this PowerBook, and this is later in the run of the PowerBook, but here's the first innovative thing I'll point out about the PowerBook. So the PowerBook was the first laptop. Now, granted, Macintosh was always a graphical user interface, while your DOS machines, Windows hadn't really taken off yet, right?
No.
In a big way. Yeah. So they were the first to take the keyboard and essentially push it back up towards the screen and then have a built-in trackball in the middle. So yours is a perfect example of the early ones. And then create those automatic palm rests. So basically all laptops are this way now. Other than they went to a trackpad, of course, later on, you know, nowadays.
Yes.
But so the PowerBook line was the first to really do that. And so obviously very
ergonomic.
Innovative. Yeah. Well, and it just made sense, right? With a graphical user interface, you must have a pointing device. But then
that's created the automatic touch screens weren't very well refined back then.
So great find.
Thank you.
I like it. All right. So what did I pick first? So moving along, I picked a vintage Apple Macintosh PowerBook 150 laptop computer with power supply. So I'm not going to look all this stuff up, but this one, as far as how it looks, it pretty much looks just like the original PowerBook concept, or, you know, the PowerBooks that shipped, and they were the 100, I think the 130 or four, you know, or 170, something like that. This, again, I'm not going to look it up, but so this is a fairly early PowerBook, but I believe the 150 might have been like a second generation. But here you go. Here's a vintage Apple Macintosh PowerBook 150. Laptop computer with power supply. It's a buy it now at $139.95 with free shipping. And they're showing it working. It looks to be in good, clean, you know, nice condition.
Yes.
They're all gray. What does it say, though? No signs of damage. So I think the only problem with it is just that it doesn't have an operating system. You know, so it's just showing the disk, the flashing ? Disk on the screen. So you'd need to put an operating system, which is pretty easy to get a hold of.
The power supply looks like the same one for the original Macintosh portable. So that tells me it probably relies on the inner battery to stay functioning.
No, I think they changed by this point. If I'm not mistaken, I believe
they can run off a power supply.
I think so. But don't quote me. I'm not totally sure, but I believe that changed right after the Macintosh portable. But there you go. It's kind of a... I kind of always liked the design of it. I thought it was definitely very different from any PC laptop.
Yeah, although I think, and it probably happened afterwards, but I think Toshiba sort of modeled. I see some Toshiba look in this. And Toshiba probably, you know, copied the idea from Apple. And then the screen on this kind of looks like those mid-2000s ThinkPads, IBM ThinkPads. They had that like bezel around the top.
Oh, right. And so I can't help myself when I look it up. It was 8 megahertz faster. Oh, yeah, so its predecessor. Oh, it was the last member of the PowerBook 100 series to use the original case design. Yeah, so this came out in like mid-94. So this was later in the run, but where it had the original case design.
Yeah, the Toshiba that I thought it looked like was later in the 90s. So, yeah.
Check this out. It says, though it used a 140 case design, its internals were based on the PowerBook Duo 230.
Okay.
Anyway, so like the one that you had. But so take it away, Jeff, with the next.
All right. I got to get to my next one here.
Oh, here you go. So this one that you picked is in the original, like the original
170.
lineup.
170.
Yeah.
All right. This is, very similar to, and look is the one you picked. So.
And all grayscale, too, at that point.
Yes. And the screen does look brighter. It looks whiter than the other ones. There's not much more to say about this because I guess between the 150, was it 150, 170?
Right.
There's probably just maybe internal hardware differences, maybe speed differences, processor differences.
Again, I'm not, without looking it up, since this is in the original lineup from 1991, I'm almost certain this is whatever megahertz 68030 processor. And probably the 150 is like is an 040. So just a faster processor.
The 150 was faster?
I would certainly think so.
The weird thing is that, yours doesn't have an end price. It's somebody's putting it up for $140 for shipping. This one sold for $50 plus modest shipping for what it is. It's probably fairly heavy. So it's $13.45 for expedited shipping from Colorado to me. So they must be able to stuff that into a flat rate priority mailbox and go from there.
And in answer to your question about the battery thing, this doesn't prove it, but you got to think that, again, this laptop is 25 around that old. Certainly the battery doesn't work, but the fact that it still powers on, it's just a power supply. Yeah, I think
that's true.
It's wired differently than the portable and some of the earlier ones from the late 80s.
The electronics are more efficient. They don't need all that heavy power requirement.
Well, and I think they use different kind of batteries versus the NiCad or whatever is that what the portable used?
NiCad was the original ones. Then they went to
ion. Yeah.
No, nickel metal hydride, I think. But that was kind of later.
Or basically the Mac Portable, it used sort of like a mini car battery, right?
Or the Mac Portable used a lead acid battery, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it sure weighs like one.
But get it. Yeah, $50 and it works. That's a deal.
Yeah, you can play around with OS 7.6.1, I guess.
And, if
it was installed on here.
And you can download that. I think you can download, at least 7.1 and older from Apple's website. You can download the images for free.
Oh, wonderful.
And there's other sites, of course, too, that you could get, other old software.
Don't they have to be in a... How do they get put onto disk then? Because aren't Apple...
You would have... You'd have to have a way of, creating...
They have a special multiple read-write speeds, don't they, on those drives? They can change their speed as they move from track to track.
That I don't know. But, of course, it is a different format from PC. So you would have to have access to a Mac and to make the... What am I trying to say here? Make the images, or you'd have to have make a Mac compatible hard drive and put the disk images on it, then boot it that way on SCSI. But then you have to have an adapter, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking at the ports on this. It's more ports than the 150.
And you see the thing right in the middle?
Multiple connector.
Yeah, that's the SCSI. It needs a special dongle to then give you the more traditional SCSI connector that regular Macs use.
That's what's on there. Okay. Because I saw that on the 150. Well, what is that?
Yeah, and since we're looking at it, it's got, and then the two to the right is the ADBs, so keyboard, mouse. Then you have headphone and microphone, and then I guess serial for like a modem or a printer.
Yes.
And then I guess I'm not looking that close. Is that maybe a phone?
A built-in modem.
Cable. Yeah, that would make sense.
So you have serial to talk to some devices.
All right, so moving along, what did I find? Oh, okay, so now totally changing it up. And these, I didn't find a lot of these that were in good shape that ran or whatever. So this is jumping up 10 years, around 2001. So this is the Apple original PowerBook G4 15-inch with carrying case bundle. And so this is still for auction. Buy it now or make an offer, $149. Free shipping, from Colorado. I don't think that's the original, because it must be the original power plug with it. But so this was called the Titanium. And are you familiar with these, Jeff?
Well, I'm looking. I don't see any hidden hinges yet.
No. So this is the first of this kind. And so this was especially – so at this point, of course, Apple had already adopted the trackpad, and they were innovators in that sense. They didn't invent it, but they were one of the early laptop manufacturers to, you know, start using trackpads. Of course, all laptops use trackpads now. But this – basically, this 15-year-old laptop, this design, is essentially what we all use to this day. So they are very innovative in its design. So this is called the Titanium. But if you notice, for 2001, it has a widescreen format screen.
Yeah.
Slightly different from the today's. But also, at the time, this was considered like crazy thin and light for how powerful and for what it was. It was a beautiful laptop. Its design was just amazing at the time.
True titanium keeps the weight down.
Yeah. But, I mean, basically your modern MacBook Pro that I'm sitting on right now, or if you have an Ultrabook, that this is the granddaddy of all those. So not to try to give Apple or this too much credit, but I just think Apple's actually innovated, especially innovated laptop design in some other ways, over the last 20 years or so. And now, this machine, of course, came out. Steve Jobs had come back to the company. But one thing I wanted to point out, too, I just remembered, was that original PowerBook line, and then later into the mid-90s and some of the innovations that happened there. Here's a good example of where Steve Jobs wasn't at Apple then. John Sculley, the bad guy, was there, right?
Yeah.
And so yes, obviously Apple innovated and made some good products and did some great stuff even when Steve Jobs wasn't there.
Well, wasn't Johnny Ive there?
Nope, I don't think so. I don't think he came into like the mid-90s.
Okay.
But I don't know that for sure, but...
So he wouldn't have had influence on this design?
On this one, yeah, definitely. Oh, he was, in charge of Apple's design by this point.
Okay.
With the titanium. But I'm just pointing out that, sometimes these where people say that, Apple's totally sucked and everything was lousy for Steve Jobs came back. And, well, yeah, they were doing bad when he came back, but they also did, they were also very successful there up until just a couple of years, before he came back. And still were very innovative. An influence to industry.
Yeah, after they got rid of a lot of those, what were those machines, desktop machines that were in the middle there?
The 90s. Performas?
Performas and stuff.
I mean,
they worked, but they were not innovative. It's just a different shape of a boring beige box.
Right.
And I have LC, the LC series, I have an LC2 and LC3.
LC, yeah. I owned an LC2 as our first color Mac that my family ever owned, and it was a Performa because I bought it at Sears. So for whatever weird reason, they rebadged them that way. So go ahead and take it with your next one.
All right, let me load this one up here. Okay, here it is.
Oh, this is a nice system.
Ooh. Wait, let me open the link. There we go.
Got a lot of money. Went for a lot.
Yeah, so I had to pick something that, only rich people can afford, right? Let's see here. You still there?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes. You cut out for a bit.
There you go. This one's got the dock, man.
Let me silence my phone here real quick.
Yeah, that's why this went for so much. This has got everything. The battery, power. Also, this is a power PC-based Duo dock, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, this one, it still has that buttons around the front as some of those other ones, so I guess that was a thing. And yeah. Nice color display, some external parts like external floppy, and it looks like there was some other adapters.
It's actually two Duo machines. You notice that? It's two systems, yeah. It's a what is it saying? It's a Duo 2300C, which is I'm pretty sure a PowerPC based, the only one Duo.
Oh, there's the other one.
And then it's also got a 280C, which was the high end version of the 68040 ones. And then
okay,
it has
one of these,
the dock and everything. So
it says PowerBook Duo 230 on it. It looks like it's got a bad screen. It's got a line through it across the bottom. So, let's see. It looks like an external battery charger.
Oh, I see. I see what you're talking about.
DVD, or no, duo dock bracket. It's like a sort of part. So I guess you have kind of a collection of parts here along with it. And then the original box on one of them. So you have the PowerPC duo, and then you have the 230, the black and white version.
And you see the dock, what I'm talking about? So it's like just a big bay thing that you you plug it into. It sucks it in.
Did I get that far in the pictures? What am I missing here?
So basically, you had your base stayed on your desk with your display.
And are we looking at the same one here?
It should be. Yeah. Okay, Apple PowerBook Duo 2300C in original box, Duo Dock Plus, Duo 280C RAM extras. Right.
Okay. Oh, there it is. I went right over the picture thinking that was an external SCSI drive. Okay. Yeah, that is a big thing, isn't it? And it has the key too.
Yeah, because you could lock it.
So I guess that's a good thing. Do they all? Like other things, like I remember the ThinkPad docking stations, you would always lose the key. Mm. Or if you acquire one, you have to drill out the keyhole so you can release it from the docking station.
That'd be pretty neat. I'd love to see one of these working again.
Well, somebody will. Or did, because it ended April 28th. Yeah, $472. And for me, from Arnold, Maryland, it would have only been $20 shipping. Boy, how are people getting away with these low shipping
I don't know.
Costs without taking a loss on it? Because things I put on eBay that weigh more than a couple pounds, I end up eating the shipping on, or a good chunk of it, because it never calculates right for me. I'm afraid to put some of my heavier stuff on there without, setting the minimum a little higher, because I'll end up be paying to give it away just because of the shipping.
This is a nice system. Actual locking key. The key is not bent as many are. So the Duo Dock has a hard drive installed. Oh, but the drive failed at the click of death.
Oh. Well, it's a matter of just redoing that, right? Just rebuilding it, getting another one, putting it in.
Yeah, you could replace it.
SCSI drive, right?
Nothing else. Right. Should be. I would think so, yeah, at that time frame.
Now, this last item looks like it just recharges batteries. Last picture in the series.
Right. Yep. That's all it does. So okay. You could have two, and then you could have one sitting there charging it all the time.
Okay. So that was the thing.
And then if you could look at a picture where it shows like the floppy external floppy drive, do you see that? It's sitting next to the laptop, and then it's also this other little device sitting there on the table.
Yeah, I was wondering what that device was.
I think that's also another. That's just like a little teeny dock. So basically, you can take that and just plug it in, and then that gives you like. I think printing and networking and
a couple other ports.
ADB, yeah. Without the big giant dock or whatever.
Okay.
Pretty nice. All right, so we'll move along. All right, so the next one, so what I picked is another this is roughly just before the Titanium came out. So this is also when the designs changed quite a bit. So this is a vintage Apple PowerBook G3 Pismo, 400 megahertz collector's item, dual boot, works great. Okay. Good cosmetic condition with some wear. They want buy it now for $89, $25 shipping. Really not bad. I think it says everything's in pretty good shape. The case shows some wear. Hardly noticeable cracks in the hinge area. Okay, the battery does not hold charge. What's with the clear keys? They're not totally clear. They're sort of like...
Yeah, they like smoked in a way.
Smoked.
But you can see the mechanics underneath. Mm-hmm.
It's funny when you're up on it, I don't think you see it as much because of the way the guy took the picture with lighting. But these are really nice. These were roughly like $2,500, I think, when they were new. And I think I have this correct too. So this was for 3 years, Apple made these PowerBook G3s before the G4 came out, and they changed it every year. So in '98, they had the Wall Street, and it was a little bit thicker and heavier, and had black keys, and it still had the traditional SCSI and all that. And then in 99, they came out with what was called the Lombard, and it looked more like this one, and it was sort of a hybrid between the connections. And this is a 2000 called the Pismo, and then it had, I think it lost a SCSI and some of the more, what do you call that, the legacy connections, and then it has USB and everything. And the keyboard, you could had two little hinges up top where you could pull it off, and then that's where you put the airport card under it and stuff like that.
Okay, so users can do some...
Yeah, you could upgrade it with an airport card.
Okay.
And that's the original little hockey puck or whatever they call it, power supply. But really nice laptops. I always wanted one at the time. And, you know, $2,000, the $2,500 was like insurmountable for me back then. Like, there's no way now. I was going to buy one. Yeah, now you got one for $90. This one's for sale.
And for me, it's $25 standard shipping from Los Angeles.
Yeah, me too.
Probably the same. Yeah. Really? $25?
I don't know.
What is standard shipping? Usually you can click on that and...
And so this looks to be like...
UPS ground. See, UPS isn't all that convenient for me. That's...
It looks to be like everything's pretty good about it. The only downside is that the battery doesn't work, which you can't really, you know... How old is it now? 15 years? 16 years old? You can't really expect it to work.
No.
So as a collector's item, it's not too big of a deal.
When they start sitting for a while, they start going bad.
Yeah. And so these were the years that they were black, and I always kind of thought they should stick with that color. I thought, you know, it made them look really cool. Wow, you really can see the really see through the keys.
Might have been just the way the lighting was, just went right
through. Yeah, but I swear when you're just like using it, it didn't seem to be that obvious. But but there you go. All right, what do you got?
I got kind of a joke.
Oh yeah, this is your random.
My joke random one, yeah, we're back last to random ones. The vintage, I'm sure you never heard of this before, the vintage Apple IIsc computer.
Yeah.
It's really small. It's like reminiscent of the TRS-80 Model 1. It's just a computer and a keyboard, right?
Right.
But this one had a mouse. And it hooks up to a printer. So, see, now it's a lot like the Atom.
So they don't know what they have here.
They don't know what they have. They have the external drive and external hard drive, it looks like. But, yeah, it's the only thing it's missing, according to them, is the monitor. But, of course, that's the computer.
They don't even show a monitor.
That's the whole point. It's missing the monitor.
So basically,
comes with the 20SC hard drive, disk drive, keyboard, mouse, and printer. Monitor is not included. Everything has been tested that turns on, but functionality has not been tested.
So really what you have here is everything but a computer and a monitor.
Yes.
You have a Mac Plus keyboard and mouse. That SC20 is a SCSI 20 megabyte hard drive, which could work with a Mac Plus. And then slightly later model. It's like a double density, or it could be a high density disk drive, SCSI cable, it looks like. And then an ImageWriter 2 printer.
Yeah.
Which all this stuff together is not worth $300 to me.
Nope.
Even with free shipping.
Yeah, that's right. But apparently it all works.
And this person, look at this. This person has 453 things for sale. And they have some other. Wow, they have some other classic computing stuff, like a Lear-Siegler ADM5 terminal, an Osborne 1 for $2,000. Yeah, dream on. A Heathkit H89 vintage computer for $350, or best offer. That's the bargain right there, if it works.
Commodore VIC modem, telephone interface cartridge, $40. Now, they're showing two VIC modems, a programmer's aid cartridge, and an 8K RAM cartridge. I hope they don't think this all goes together. No, they know it's separate, but $40 for that actually might be an okay deal. Osborne approved software. Did you see that?
Where did you, this is the same person too?
Yeah, Osborne.
I'm flicking through it, but
unless it's coming in a different order, this says approved software at the top. Osborne Computer Corporation. This is the approved software for the Osborne computer, as shown in the pictures. Pages are very crisp. Was there such a thing called Osborne approved software? No, it's
CPM.
Actually called Grammatic. There's a label on the back of it that says Grammatic, but I guess they have kind of a approved software list, and this just happens to be one of the many approved softwares.
But I don't know if this is all stuff out of maybe a household that, you know.
Who knows? It's Mansman Tally Printer, MT140, vintage printing, rare, of course, $250.
Also, some old stereo equipment like a Sanyo Vintage AM/FM that looks pretty nice, 1981. $125 are.
I think we lost you again.
Muted it.
Okay.
I had to tell the family to try to keep it down a little bit.
All right.
They're talking really loud. Oh, I do see a Commodore VIC-20. Here we go. Yep. So, wow, check that person out. Some interesting stuff here. So, you know, clearing house, right?
Absolutely. Something. Or something, yeah. I don't know who would have this kind of stuff in their household. Or this collection of stuff.
Yeah, or it could have been, you know, I hate to say, I don't know why, it's what I'm thinking, though, is it could have been, like, a relative or somebody maybe died. And this is, like, you know, and they were into, like, electronic, like us. And maybe this is, like, their stuff. Who knows?
That could be Sound Blaster Live cards. So, yeah, it's a little of everything. All right.
All right. So, the last thing, what I have is my random auction, which, it's not really random in this case. I made it where it was completely appropriate to what we're talking about. Oh, yeah. So, this one shows the PowerBook 520. So let me go to it. So, Macintosh PowerBook 520, nice shape for Apple collectors, free ship. And it's $149.99. Buy it now. It's 1 cent from Canada. Can't beat that. And so this is the first version redesign of the PowerBook, and this is when it got a trackpad. So, so there you go. You know, showing when Apple moved to a trackpad, and that was definitely innovative and sort of prompted the industry to kind of start adopting trackpads. But it works. $150, I think, is a little much. Unit is in great shape for its age. Boots up fine, no issues. Battery's dead. Yep, we'll have to be replaced. Bezel is a bit loose. That happens with these particular PowerBooks a little bit more too. I guess the hinges on them just get loosened up a little more easily. Disk drive works fine. Oh, prior owner's information is still present. Recommend you reinstall OS.
Oh, you have to wonder sometimes.
You can delete their files.
Yeah, that is easy on the Macintosh operating system, that you can just remove stuff
as opposed
to having to uninstall things that, you know, remove entries from the registry, because there is no such thing.
Right. And check it out. Oh, wow. This particular seller, if you click on what else they have for sale, they have 1,426 items, and they've got a bunch of other Macs, like a Quadro 950 and a Macintosh Plus and a PowerBook G3. How about that? A Pismo, just like the other one that we were looking at. And anyway, I won't go into it. Other PowerBooks. A lot of Apple stuff. They have a compact portable 286. Here you go. Here's your NEC Versa notebook that sort of looks like an older PowerBook, but it still has the keyboard not pushed back. So they hadn't adopted that yet. For $119.99, that's not bad.
Yeah, this list must appear differently to each of us, because I'm scrolling through and not seeing all that.
Oh, you're not?
Oh, no, there it is. Okay.
And yeah, here's a Toshiba Satellite 430CT.
The Satellite series. That's the one I was thinking of earlier.
And it has the keyboard pushed back and the, you know, and all that. So they had adopted that. Of course, Windows had come on by that point. All righty. The kids are in and out. So what do you think?
Well, I think if you want a PowerBook,
you
can get them for a decent price. Yeah, it's not going to run the latest, greatest software, but it'll still give you that Macintosh look and feel in either, you know, black and white or color. And you can get the same experience from it. Just, you won't have to set it up on a whole bunch of desktop space.
Yeah, depending on what you want, I think even if you want some of the older ones, I think if you're patient and you look carefully, not counting shipping, of course, you should be able to easily get one that works in nice shape. And this is obviously, the battery's not going to work, but less than $100. And then like that titanium and the Pismos and Lombards and all those early 2000 ones, I think you should be able to get those for around $100 too. Maybe a little bit more, depending on if it comes with some extras or is especially nice condition, things like that. So not a lot of money, really.
No.
But I think also if you look at Craigslist, depending on where you are, and you, again, are sort of look regularly and you're patient, you probably can still find these hiding out locally. And people maybe want to get rid of them even cheaper.
Yeah, one thing I noticed, well, that's true. Sometimes you'll get that in Craigslist because people just want them out of their attic, but they think they are worth something, or it's going to take too much for them to take it to a recycling center.
Yeah.
Because a lot of places, you know, Pennsylvania wants you to recycle. but recycling centers are very hard to coordinate with.
So let's face it, selling them eBay is, you know, or it's, you have to, well, you have to deal with trusting people, or you have to do that anyway, I guess. But I mean, it's pretty safe nowadays, but then you got to go through all the hassle of like packing it up and taking it to the post office and shipping it and all that stuff, or FedEx or UPS. So
that's true. But I did notice that the auctions we picked that were Apple related, obviously, did not say Steve Jobs associated with it, no matter what it was.
Right.
It didn't say Steve Jobs associated with it.
Oh, because I guess for most of these, he wasn't at the company then.
That doesn't stop some people, because right. It says Apple in it, they'll put Steve Jobs, look.
Right. Yeah. So really only that Pismo and then the titanium one, yeah, he was back at the company at that point. But all the earlier ones, he wasn't there. And he never made a next laptop.
No, I wonder if Ben Heck could do that.
That would be cool. Somebody needs to do that.
Exactly.
Never even thought of that before.
They could probably write it in FPGA and recreate the next computer in FPGA and then make a laptop version of it.
But of course, you know, there is Next Step that runs on Intel. So you could also just get any laptop.
Oh, there you go.
Generic laptop and run Next Step or Intel on it.
Voila. Not supposed to look at the Mechanical Turk inside of it. It's just, it works. It is what it is.
And actually, Canon sold some desktops that ran Next Step. So I don't know if they ever did anything with the laptop. So you got some email. We got some feedback.
Yes, I found some feedback from Josh Malone. And I'll pretty much read it verbatim. He says, just listening to your podcast on the Tandy Model 100. He says he has a 102 and it's a great machine. There's been some good work lately on alternative ROM adapters for these things, but I seriously doubt you could get CPM ported since the machine has no actual storage. Everything was stored live in the RAM and edited in place. And I'm going to break in here. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I wasn't sure because I'm not too familiar with the internals. It would be cool since it ran basically a Z80 based processor that it would run some form of CPM, but the nature of CPM requires storage and stuff. So I can see where that wouldn't work. And then to continue with his email, that weird inscription was certainly a serial port stat string. I guess it's referring to one of the auctions we had. I don't quite remember it off the top of my head. The 100 used the stat command to configure serial, and each character in that string sets parity, rate, or handshake settings. And the PPS might be a delay setting. The UART buffer was very small, so it's very easy to overflow during serial uploads to the device. You have to use a line delay in it, or it'll drop data. And he says, thanks. He says, anyway, is enjoying our podcast, and thanks for it. Well, thank you, Josh. We're glad that you actually, we're glad that you listen.
thanks for writing too.
Yes, absolutely. Didn't want to sound disparaging to everybody else, but, I was a little slip there. No, we appreciate everybody who listens. It makes this podcast more fun, more worthwhile.
Tell us more.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder how many people will get talking about their PowerBooks. Because that's sort of during the era where more and more people were discovering computers.
Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a big following for all things Apple.
Absolutely.
Especially vintage Macs has got a huge following. So we should get some good listeners and feedback. So I'll take a quick look at Twitter here. See, I've gone back to about the 20th of June. That's roughly 2 weeks, I guess, or so. So
yeah, just about.
First thing to mention is... from Stephen Mitchell, and he tweeted to us, hi chaps, how about looking into the Intertech Superbrain series of computers? I'm currently restoring a QD. So did we, that's kind of older than where we are right now, right?
Yeah, Superbrain. Where did I hear that before? Did we mention that in passing on one of the original shows?
Maybe. Here, let's just look it up real quick. But I guess we have not covered it, and it's certainly, I've heard of them. And Superbrain computer, let's see.
Who made that?
Superbrain. Intertech.
Oh, Intertech.
Yeah, here it is. The Intertech Superbrain. So that's around, from 1979. So the QD for quad density disk drives was this Intertech Superbrain. Well, it looks pretty cool. I like it. I like how it looks. There's a picture of it here on Wikipedia. But unfortunately, we're already well past the desktops in the late 70s. We're now, what year are we in? I guess with the PowerBook, we're kind of into the early 90s. We talked about the titanium and all that because we're just covering the PowerBook altogether.
Doesn't mean we won't hit an end and then roll back through and try to fill in some gaps.
It's a very interesting, neat-looking computer, though. I like it with the red keys on the...
It kind of reminds me of the Heathkit computer in its shape. It's kind of got that late H89. 70s or early 80s. Yeah, the H89.
And I guess, is it U.S. computer or is it U.K.? All right, well, moving past, thank you for writing, Stephen, or for tweeting us. Also, Matt London said, love the recreation interviews you're collecting. Have a look at, and he gave a website, zxdesign.info/harlequin.shtml. And so this is, did you happen to look at this, Jeff?
No, I did not.
It's like a ZX, I guess, reproduction or replacement. So maybe we'll have to look more into that. But we definitely want to do more, you know, as more we find out anything recreations. I enjoy that a lot, too. He also tweeted us that he said, so Vintage Volts was asking about targeting the Z88 in something other than BASIC. Check out Z88DK.org.
I did see that one. I took a glance at it when I had some time. And I thought it was pretty. In fact, I think I even commented on it. I've just been so busy lately, I forget what I commented.
Okay, and that's from Matt London again. And he said something else here about it, but we'll move forward and see. Should also be... Oh, no, you said should also be useful for those who have or still do build or use Z80 single-board computers.
Yes, okay, I just found it here. That's right. And it's sort of like a cross-compiler. So I guess it's just a matter of adapting it to whatever hardware you have that's Z80-based. And, you know, and people... There are people out there who build their own Z80 computers just because they want to, and this might give them the ability, as long as they can figure out how to get it from a PC to their hardware, you know, they can get started on, programming CPM-based applications. I guess if they designed an EEPROM-based storage, they could, you know, burn an EEPROM and stick it in their hardware and have the stuff there ready to go.
And lastly, we also got some feedback from Samoth, S-A-M-M-O-T-H, on Twitter. And he says, you've talked about following your Twitter account, but didn't mention your handle. Couldn't find it on your site either. So our handle, and we're going to put a link in the show notes this time, but our handle is at History of PC.
That's right.
And but we'll put a link. We're actually putting a link in the show notes. I guess for now on, we'll do that. For our Facebook page, as well as Twitter. And didn't I put another one? Oh, and also I added, Jeff, we'll start adding, is the link to the Vintage Computer Forum. I just thought that kind of went along there. Which is part of the Vintage Computer Federation. It used to be hosted at a different place, but that's kind of the central Vintage Computing forums, I think, on the internets or whatever.
Yes, but they have a lot of stuff there.
But Samoth also said, but thanks for the interesting podcast. But thank you
very much
for telling us, because you're right. We've been telling you, oh, follow us on Twitter and do this and do that. We hadn't been listening. So, all right. So enough of that, and basically that wraps it up. eBay Show 17 is going to be released on Friday, July 15th, and that's okay for you, Jeff, right? Because you won't be leaving yet.
That would be the day before I leave. So yeah.
So is that okay?
Wait, Friday, July. Okay, that'll be a couple days before I leave.
Because we'll still be recording on the
14th. Looking at the 17th, thinking that was July 17th. Yes, it'll be the day before I. It'd be the weekend. Just before the weekend, the Friday before I leave. That's
okay. And once again, we're going to spend the entire episode covering an influential and important line of laptops. Guess which one?
Well, you had the ThickPad.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, I had just changed.
Did I really put that?
Yeah.
The ThickPad. Yeah. So the IBM ThinkPad. And, you know, it is like the PowerBook obviously technically doesn't still exist, but... Well, actually, technically, it does still exist because the MacBook Pro is in the same line as the PowerBook. But a ThinkPad absolutely exists in name as well. And that goes back almost as far. So we're going to spend a whole episode talking about the ThinkPad. which has been innovative or influential, definitely. But I don't know, innovative a little bit too. What do you think?
They had the line. They pushed it through. They made some PC-based innovations with it. And yeah. They went in their own direction, but they kind of traveled parallel with Apple.
It's been a standard, and it's still around. So. And they still have a special niche or a solid place in the corporate world. So,
anyway, trust Big Blue, right?
Yep. Can't go. No one ever got fired for buying IBM. Of course,
that's
it's,
true.
It's Lenovo now. Find all of our show notes at historyofpersonalcomputing.com. Send feedback to feedback@historyofpersonalcomputing.com. You know, or you can comment on our on our site on the different articles there. So we'd love to hear from you, and also please tell someone about us. You can also write a review about us on iTunes. Spread the word on Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter, and perhaps you're in a specialty discussion group or the Vintage Computer Forum. Say something, please. And again, we're going to give the link to Facebook, Twitter, and the Vintage Computer Forum on our notes page. And that's going to be it for this episode. Remember, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Bye, Jeff.
All right, bye.
Some Beanie Babies new with tank from some guy I've never met in Norway. Found him on eBay. I am the type who is liable to snipe.